Dr. Jerry, you got the whole world waiting. Been ready for you to start the conversation. Your point of view, it got the haters confused. Leave it up to you to bring us all the good news. Positive vibes and the sex appeal too. Dr. Andre Jerry, can I get an interview?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Live with Dr. Andre Jerry, your weekly destination for bold conversations, unfiltered truth, and practical inspiration to help you unlock your best life. I'm your host, Dr. Andre Jerry, and we're broadcasting live from beautiful San Juan, Puerto Rico, and tonight's episode is a little different. Now, usually I'd say we're back with another Random Rants and Real Talk episode, but not tonight. Tonight, I'm going to expand on one of the most talked about segments from the show, the one we call Better Late Than Never. Now, Better Late Than Never is a fun segment where many of you know where I poke fun at myself for being notoriously late to everything from pop culture to movies, TV shows, music, and especially social media trends. I don't know what it is about the trends, but I'm notoriously late for those. But listen, I've had a lot of fun with that particular segment, and we're going to continue that. But for tonight's episode, I wanted to take a little bit of a different approach to the concept of better late than never. And I wanted to expand that and make it applicable to personal development. And the reason why I wanted to explore this is because I've noticed that a lot of people, maybe even some of you, have this notion or believe that you're too old to adopt new habits or a new lifestyle or just adopting something new or a better way of going about things. Listen, as long as you have breath in your body, it's never too late. It's never too late to learn or to grow or to expand. So tonight I want to speak directly to the part of you that knows that you could be doing more, but perhaps you feel like it's too late. You know, I really want to help someone out there change their mindset about that sort of thing. Maybe you have been wanting to take action on something, but not quite sure what to do or where to start. Or maybe you've had like an idea or concept that you sat on for years. It could have even been a book or something like that, but you sat on it for years and now you notice online or in social media somewhere where someone has implemented your idea or at least a version of your idea. And you kind of think, oh, well, it's too late now. I can't do that. I know that's happened to me before, but I don't want you to feel that way because that thing could simply just be a reminder or the nudge or the fire under your butt that you need to finally get your version of that idea out into the world. Think about this. Every business has competition. That's just the way it is. There's always going to be something bigger, a better product, a better service out there. That's no matter what business that you're in. But there's no one that's going to be able to put the special touch on that idea or that concept that you can. You bring something very unique to the table. So it doesn't matter if 1,000 other people have your same idea. Have faith in what you bring to the table, your unique difference. Better late than never. You're going to get tired of hearing me say that tonight, but that phrase might just be the key to unlocking the best part of your life. So let's go ahead and get into it. So I'm going to start by reiterating this. You're not too old, it's not too late, and you're not too far gone to make changes or to try something different. You are just one decision away from a better version of yourself. And so tonight I'm going to give you some practical, doable, real world things that will help you level up. Okay? So let's go ahead and dig in. The first thing I want you to consider is starting a YouTube channel. Okay? Hear me out. I talked about this briefly in one of the past episodes we had, but tonight I want to kind of discuss it a little bit more in detail. So for a moment, I want you to stop thinking of YouTube from a consumer perspective. And I want you to start looking at it from a business standpoint. Put your business hat on. And it doesn't matter if you, you know, whether you consider yourself a business person or entrepreneur or a stay-at-home mom, a stay-at-home dad, a retired person, unemployed, in between jobs, it doesn't matter. But I really want you to start considering creating a YouTube channel. And here's why. I know you may not consider yourself a teacher or a coach or even a mentor, but there's something that you know or something that you have experienced that, if shared, could help somebody. It could help somebody who's going through the same type of thing or something similar, and they're struggling with it. They're struggling with it, or they may feel like they're the only ones going through that particular thing. And you putting your spin on it or talking about your version of it, it's not saying that you're some guru and, you know, you have all the answers. A lot of times what it can be is just sharing what you've gone through or venting about it. It could not only be a catharsis for you, but it could help someone else to get unstuck. A lot of people are just stuck. And I know a lot of you are probably thinking, look, I'm not telling all of my business on you. I'm not telling all of my business on YouTube. You know, I hear you. I hear you. Maybe sharing personal stories and, you know, some of your personal details aren't really your thing. I can understand that. But there are a ton of other content ideas that you could look into. Many of those topics are a lot more popular than the personal development space that I'm a part of. You know, there are channels where 100% of the content is completely ripped off and repackaged and reused. Maybe many of you have heard about these types of channels. They're very popular on TikTok especially. It's called OPC, Other People's Content. And so there's an entire business model and courses and all types of stuff that teach people how to monetize social media content that are from other sources, other people's content. And, you know, there are people who make thousands every month doing this thing. And once I figure this shit out, I'm going to do it. But like I said, there are tons of different ideas out there that you could use for your own YouTube channel content. I want you to consider this. YouTube is what's referred to as digital real estate. It's the new TV. Because I don't know if you've noticed, but nobody's watching TV anymore. Not really. I know I don't. And if you're anything like me, you're probably using your smart TV to watch YouTube or using it as an extension to your laptop or your smartphone or something like that. So, you know, it's the new TV. That's where all of the content is being watched now. And so I don't really care how boring you think your life is. There's an audience out there for you. There are people out there who will find a lot of value in your content, whatever it may be. You know, some of you have great stories to tell. You're really great storytellers. And your stories could inspire a lot of people. Some of you are just funny. And your content could be something that just gives people a 5 or 10 minute break from their day, their stressful day, or something like that. Some of you love to cook and, you know, are really great at cooking and have all types of recipes that are like out of this world, or recipes that are budget friendly. A lot of people are looking up budget friendly recipes. That's an entire niche in and of itself. On the other hand, a lot of you may have been through and survived so much crap in your life that, you know, to the point where people wouldn't even believe some of it. And hearing how you overcame all that could be just what someone needed to hear to realize that, you know what, I can get through this. I can do this. And, you know, even if you're like an angry, hateful person who just likes being negative all the time and complaining and talking shit about other people, there's an audience out there for that too, a huge audience. You know, so the point I'm making is that YouTube gives you access to a worldwide audience. I'm talking billions of people. YouTube has over 2 billion active users. So you can't tell me that there isn't an audience for your type of content. And I haven't even mentioned, you know, the people who are existing entrepreneurs and business owners, and, you know, you already have a product or service that you're offering. In that case, you better have a YouTube channel. I had to learn this stuff too. You're leaving exposure, and you're leaving consumers and customers, and you're leaving money on the table by having a business and not incorporating YouTube into your business strategy somehow. Okay? And here's the really great part. YouTube is actively and aggressively seeking new content creators. That means you. That means me. That means everybody out there who has a YouTube account. We all use our Gmail or whatever to have it. So you have a YouTube account, but you don't have more than likely a YouTube channel. So that's a little different. So I'm sure you've heard about how much some of these content creators make. And I'm going to talk about monetization a little bit later. But yeah, YouTube is desperate for new content creators. And when I say content creators, I'm not talking about that overly polished content that you see from these experienced YouTubers who've, you know, been on YouTube for years, and these big influencers with 100K plus, you know, subscribers and these viral videos and all of that. And they got the personal or professional thumbnails and all the fancy equipment. That's not what YouTube is looking for right now. If you have all that stuff and you have that going on, great, more power to you. But that's not what's hot right now. What YouTube is looking for right now are regular, everyday folks who are just willing to turn on their camera phone, press record, and just go and talk about just whatever's on their mind. You know, you don't have to worry about getting all dressed up and stuff like that. A lot of these people, I'm sure you've seen some of them, they don't even comb their hair, it looks like, before doing a video. You know, and believe it or not, those are some of the main videos that end up getting the most views, because it's relatable. People can relate to someone just rolling out of bed in their robe with their coffee and their dog in their bed, and they're just disillusioned or depressed or just can't deal today. And they're just talking about it. They're talking for 10, 15 minutes about how they just can't deal. And people gravitate towards that because it's real, it's unpolished, it's unfiltered. And it makes other people who are in similar situations feel like they're not alone. Like, that is so me right now. And you wouldn't believe those people are getting hundreds of thousands of views, which translates into getting monetized and making a good living just telling people about your life. You know, they're dressing how they would dress at home. They're just super casual. They're in pajamas. Like I said, they got their coffee and their dog, and they're just venting and ranting, you know, talking about how lonely they have been over the past couple of years or how depressed they are. And then sometimes it's about how great everything is going. Look at me type thing. And there's an audience for that too. And sometimes you can follow people's journey and see them going from a slump to finding a new job or a hobby and turning their life around and breaking addictions, all types of stuff. And you're, instead of watching sitcoms and different shows like we used to on TV, we're following actual lives of real people. And there are millions of videos of people who just record content right from their cars, because a lot of times that's the only place where you can just have a little bit of privacy or time to yourself. You know, maybe they're posting on their lunch break or something, or in between Uber rides or whatever the case may be. The important thing is just to press record and just go. Don't think too much about it. Don't rehearse what you're going to say. Just be natural and real, and let whomever gravitates to it, gravitate to it. Don't concern yourself at first with views and all that stuff, and all the stuff I used to do just starting out. Don't go back and rewatch your videos. Don't edit. Editing is not in right now. Really, people don't want to look at super edited content. It's not relatable. Just record, post, and go do something else or make the next video and forget about it. Because if you go back and watch your own content, then you're going to start picking it apart and judging it and, oh, why did I wear that? And I don't like how I look in this. And it's just going to be a mess. And you're going to get discouraged, or you're going to look at the views. The views are just not going to be high starting out. Sometimes it is. It just depends on the person. But don't worry about all of that stuff. Just trust the process and keep posting. Okay? Now, I also want you to consider this. Content creating has a very low barrier to entry, particularly if you're already tech savvy or social media savvy. If you're not, no biggie, don't worry about that. All this stuff is teachable. You can learn as you go. You know, that's what I'm doing. I'm still learning myself, and I'm just sharing what I've learned so far. I still have a lot to learn with this stuff. You know, so, but listen, seriously, if you're not already in business and you're looking to start something, think about becoming a content creator. It's pretty much the easiest side hustle out there. And once you're monetized, it can start paying quite handsomely. And you may be even in a position where you can potentially replace your full-time income. So basically all you need is your phone, some good lighting, which don't buy anything expensive. Use the sun. Use the best lighting area in your house. And your voice. That's all you need. You don't need a lot of expensive equipment when you first start out. You can add all that stuff later when you start monetizing and making money. So this is very beginner friendly. And, you know, the learning curve is very low. If you know how to record a video with your phone, then you know how to post videos on YouTube. It's pretty much the same thing. It's like uploading a video or sending a video via text or something. It's that level of difficulty, you know. So now there are some technical things like tagging and, you know, using keywords and SEO optimization and algorithms and all that stuff. You'll need to become familiarized with that down the road as you start to gain traction. But starting out, I wouldn't worry about any of that stuff. Just focus on your content, and your main concern is just establishing a set posting schedule. That's something I'm still working on. Establish a set posting schedule and get to your first 30 videos. By the time you get to your first 30 videos, you'll be comfortable with posting. You'll have some subscribers by then. You'll have a good audience and following. You'll start to gain your confidence as a content creator. And you'll sort of find your footing in terms of what works, what doesn't work, what type of direction you want to go with your channel. You may need to experiment a little bit with your content just to see what your audience responds best to. I know that's something I'm doing with my channels. I've experimented with different types of videos. Like I would do a few long form videos, and I'll do some shorts. From at least one of my channels, shorts seem to perform better. So I've, you know, continue with that, stick with what works. But the point is, don't be shy about trying out different video forms and different content ideas. You know, some of it may fall flat. Some of it may only get 7 views. Some of the stuff you think is, okay, this happens a lot, and other content creators will tell you this. The video that you think isn't going to do anything, the one that you almost delete because you think it's so stupid, that's the one that's going to end up with 7,000 and 10,000 views. I'm just telling you, that's just how it goes, and no one can explain why, or why this video and not this one where I did this and I covered this. And it's the algorithm. No one really knows. So don't delete those old videos. A lot of these big YouTubers and things like that, a lot of them will tell you that it was my early videos. One of my early videos just went viral out the blue, like years after I uploaded it. And that's what kind of propelled their channel and got them, you know, making a decent amount on YouTube and, you know, from one or two videos. So just keep that stuff in mind, okay? And let's talk about monetization. I want to be completely straightforward with you because a lot of misconceptions about monetization. Monetization, and we're talking specifically about YouTube now, that should be, that's a long game. Okay, that should be a long-term goal. We're talking a minimum of 6 months. Some people can do it in three and stuff like that. I think those are anomalies and unique situations. But from my experience, and like I said, I don't know it all, but I'm learning. But in my experience, it takes anywhere from 6 months to like 1 or 2 years before you're invited to join the YouTube partnership program. But if you stick to it, monetization can become a real possibility for your channel. You'll just need to put the work in first. And like I said, it might take months, may take a year, maybe 2 years before you start really earning a significant income. But the key is to stay consistent and just keep improving, keep studying your analytics and seeing what works, seeing what your demographic is. Is it mostly women? Is it mostly a certain age group? Take a look at all that stuff because it can help you tailor your content to be more acceptable to your particular demo. You know, so just keep being consistent, keep improving, and keep engaging with your audience, and you can really build something that's worthwhile. So I'm going to reiterate, monetization, that's a long-term goal. If you're starting a YouTube channel next week, for instance, don't expect to see immediate profits, you know, in 3 and 4 months. It's just likely not going to happen. Building a YouTube channel is really akin to, I would say, like starting your own TV network. Do you guys remember when Oprah first launched the OWN network? When that network first debuted, it was a little, it wasn't the powerhouse it is today. That channel, when it first came out, it really struggled to find its footing and to find its audience. It took years for OWN to kind of hit its stride. In fact, it wasn't until Tyler Perry came along with his first soap opera, The Haves and the Have-Nots, which I love that show. When it premiered on OWN, that's really when the network started to gain momentum. This was that show that changed everything for the network. It was what they call appointment television. It was must-see TV for a lot of people. And you had to tune in to OWN to watch it. This was before streaming was a thing. It wasn't dominating the way it is today where you can watch it when and where you want. You know, cable TV was still where people went to get their entertainment fix. So when The Haves and the Have-Nots premiered, it became a cultural phenomenon. It was a really big hit. And so that strategic partnership between Oprah and Tyler Perry was, you know, in a lot of ways, a match made in heaven. The success of that one show led to multiple spinoffs for Tyler Perry. That show became one of the cornerstones of the OWN network. And that's where, this is before Tyler Perry had his studio, of course, but he didn't really have a place to house his shows. He had a few of them on, you know, a few partnerships with TBN, but he had a lot of shows that he wanted to get aired. And so that partnership with Oprah just provided an opportunity for her and also for him. So that was sort of behind one of the driving forces behind the OWN network's rise. And, you know, it didn't stop there. There was another big show, and I know we all remember this one, Iyanla Fix My Life. That was a real game changer. And I think that's the show, I have to go back and do some study, but I think that's the show that started to help OWN turn a profit. But that show premiered back in 2012, and the series ran for, I believe, 9 or 10 seasons. I think it was 10 seasons. So well over 100 episodes. Of course, it featured the great and wise Iyanla Van Zant, who is a renowned spiritual teacher and a life coach. She helped to guide families and some individuals through some really difficult personal changes and challenges. And it was a reality show, but not like anything that we had seen before. This was different. It was transformative, and it normalized. This is what I love about that show. It normalized the idea of Black people seeking therapy, because it's not, you know how we are in many Black circles and families, and you talk about getting therapy, it just is like, oh, roll your eyes, or, you know, you don't need no therapy, you just need, you know, to go smoke a blunt or something, or go have a drink. You know, we kind of made light of it. Not all Black families, but just pretty much collectively, large pockets of Black people did not look, they frowned upon getting therapy. You know, now we take a little bit more seriously because we see it. We've seen it. We've seen, you know, how Iyanla helped shed light on a lot of the destructive patterns of pain and trauma that runs deep in a lot of Black families, you know, especially those carrying the weight of a lot of generational trauma. You know, that's another whole long conversation, but just stuff that's caused by just decades and of slavery and oppression and systemic racism. But it was a groundbreaking show that encouraged healing and opening up and having difficult conversations that we run from about our mental health, about our emotional well-being. And it, like I said, it took away that therapy stigmatization that's been prevalent for a lot of years. So in my opinion, Iyanla Fixed My Life, Iyanla Fixed My Life, that was one of the best shows on television. I hate it when it went off. But it really offered something truly profound in terms of healing and self-discovery. And see, now we see numerous shows like that now that are helping people to overcome difficult obstacles. And it gave a voice to stories that we just don't typically hear about. So it really was a cultural milestone in the realm of personal development, which is the space that I occupy. So I was really excited about that show and what it did for the OWN Network. So I know that was a bit of a rant, but, you know, just keep that in mind when you start your own YouTube journey. Remember that the road to success is not going to be a straight path or a straight line. It's going to take time, and it's going to take some persistence, and it's going to take a lot of courage, because you know how people can be in the public sphere, in the public space. You know, you may get, I haven't gotten a lot of negative comments. I really haven't, but depending on your subject matter, you can get some really interesting people. The best thing about that is just to block them or ignore them. A lot of those people, when they're coming to a platform, someone else's platform or channel, to be purposely or intentionally negative, a lot of them are just seeking attention and have their own mental things going on. So it's just, the more you can ignore things and people like that, the better off you'll be. But definitely that shouldn't be something that, you know, prevents you or makes you hesitant to start your YouTube journey. Okay? So, yeah, that's something that I really want you guys to take a look at. And remember, it's going to take some time to get to the monetization. They have it set to where, in order to be invited into the YouTube partnership program, you have to reach certain milestones. You have to have at least 1,000 subscribers. I know that sounds like a lot, but you can get there really fast. Fast meaning 3, 4, 5 months, depending on how often you post. And you have to attain 4,000 watch hours. Now, I'll be honest with you, that, particularly if you lean more on shorts for your content, it can take a while. It can be a bit of a challenge to get to those 4,000 watch hours. But again, that's where consistency is going to be very important, and just having a regular schedule where you're posting. All right. So like I said, it takes time, but trust me, if you stick with it, the rewards will definitely be worth it. Okay, listen, we're going to stop here and take a quick commercial break, but I don't want you to go anywhere, because when we come back, I'm going to dive into some more Better Late Than Never content. Specifically, I'm going to talk about how to replace bad habits with healthier ones, and why this is one of the most crucial steps that you can take for your own personal growth and development. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm James Baller of Artist First Radio, and I would like to tell you about a fascinating new book from Crime Beat's Ron Chepsik and co-author Mike Rowe. It's titled Robin Hood of the Hood, The Life and Times of Teddy Rowe, Policy Kingpin, and it's published by Strategic Media Books. The book is a historical account of Theodore Teddy Rowe, who courageously fought the Chicago Mafia, more commonly known as the Outfit, for control of the lucrative Policy racket in the Windy City. Policy, often called the numbers, is a form of illegal gambling or illegal lottery, played mostly in poor and working-class neighborhoods in the United States. In Policy, a bettor attempts to pick three digits to match those that will be randomly drawn the following day. For decades, Policy had been a staple in the black community, but when the white mob flexed its power in the late 1940s, many Policy kings knuckled under the pressure. Not Teddy Rowe. Rowe famously told mob bosses that he'd rather die than give up control of his operation. Robin Hood of the Hood chronicles an exciting chapter of Chicago history. Go to the Kindle store at Amazon and buy it for just $2.99. For information about this book and other titles, please go to strategicmediabooks.com. That's strategicmediabooks.com.
Welcome to another broadcast of Spiritual Concerns, the Deborah Ruffini Show on Artist First Radio Network. We're live from England on Saturdays and Sundays, 3 p.m. New York, 8 p.m. London. All past shows are podcasts. Find them at artistfirst.com. I'll be your host, where issues relating to spiritual matters of concern will be largely examined and discussed. Enjoy the show.
Looking for your next car? Amazon Autos has you covered. With just a few clicks, you can shop a wide selection of new vehicles, compare prices, read reviews, and even arrange pickup or delivery, just like ordering anything else on Amazon. It's the future of car buying. Simple, transparent, and all online. Backed by Amazon's trusted network and partnering with local dealerships, Amazon Autos is redefining how we shop for cars. Visit amazon.com/autos and drive into the future today.
You're back live with Dr. Andre Geary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. So if you're just joining us, we covered some powerful topics so far. We're going to dig into some more better late than never topics that I've been meaning to talk about for a while. So let's go ahead and get into it. So I touched on this a little bit last week, but I felt led to dig into this topic a little bit more because I feel like it would be beneficial for a lot of people. And this is part of the show where if you have little ones who are listening or, you know, close by, you may want to send them in the other room because, you know, a little bit about what I'm about to share is adult content and may not be appropriate for children. In fact, I know it's not appropriate. So just go ahead and usher your babies out the way. Sit them in another room. I'll wait. All right. So this is going to be classic oversharing from Dr. Andre Geary, but y'all know how I am on this show. And I can't even blame it on alcohol because, you know, I don't drink during the week anymore, only on the weekends. But I don't mind sharing a little bit of my business so long as it's going to help others and so long that it takes away at least some of the guilt and shame that a lot of people carry with themselves about certain topics. Okay, so on last week's show, I touched briefly on breaking bad habits. So trust me, I know how difficult it can be to break bad habits. I've had my share of bad habits I've had to overcome. Some I'm still working to overcome. Back in the day, I used to be a huge complainer. You know, the Bible calls that murmuring. And it's just not a good thing, particularly for someone like me, who really has never really had anything to complain about when it all comes down to it. I mean, I've gone through things like everyone else. I know I've shared with you guys about the bullying and some of the things that I've gone through in my adolescence. But for the most part, I've had a great life. There's no need for me to complain or murmur about anything. So it's just very disrespectful to God, particularly for someone who's been so blessed in many areas. What are you complaining about? So it took me years to overcome that. And of course, it took other people confronting me and saying, Andre, you're always complaining, you know, shut the hell up. And every now and then it creeps back in, you know, when I'm having a brat moment, you know. But for the most part, I've been able to weed that complaining habit out of my life. And that came from having a lot of negative mindset. You know, I had a lot of negative thoughts. I've shared with you guys, because of some of the traumas I've experienced in my adolescence, I was very angry. So I carried around a lot of anger, and especially from the bullying, you know, and not standing up for myself. So I would literally look for arguments and fights so I can redeem myself for, you know, getting slapped that one time in front of the school. So I went through a phase where I was very angry and argumentative and complaining and, you know, a big revenge seeker. If anyone effed with me, I was going to get them back. I'm not the person you effed with. Just carrying around this just huge chip all through my 20s and a little bit through my 30s as well. I had to work through that stuff. I had to work through the heavy drinking. That's something I'm actively working on. I'm 2 months into my new routine where I only drink on the weekends. And I've shared with you guys, it was really difficult at first. I was mad at the person who suggested it. I was mad at myself for, you know, taking on the challenge. But I wanted to prove to myself that, one, I'm not an alcoholic, you know. Two, I don't have this, addictive nature. Like, if I want to stop doing something, I can do it. So that was another, you know, the challenge aspect of it. And it's gotten a lot easier. I remember this past weekend, I don't think I even drank on Sunday. And, you know, when I first started this new regimen, I was over drinking on the weekends because I was, you know, just going crazy Monday through Thursday, not being able to have a drink. And so I would down a bottle of wine and a bottle of Tito's wouldn't last through Saturday. But I've noticed that over the weeks, over the past 2 months, all that has kind of curtailed. So I'm not drinking throughout the week. That's not an issue anymore. In the weekends, I'm not doing all this binge drinking stuff, you know. So I'm noticing the change, and it's for the better. So some things I'm still working on, you know. But yeah, the heavy drinking, definitely working to overcome that. I touched on this last week, and this is the one where I wanted you to send the babies out of the room. I used to have I'm not going to say a masturbation issue. I had a pornography issue. And it wasn't something that was excessive, but in my mid-20s, I just started to notice how I felt after watching pornography. Once you have that release or whatever, and you get whatever you're trying to get and get where you're trying to go, I didn't like the feeling afterward. I always felt dirty, like I had done something really wrong. And I didn't like the way it made me feel. And so I made the decision on my own without any intervention that pornography was something that I did not want in my life. This was back when I was 25, 26 years old. And this is where we actually had DVDs. You know, I had like maybe 10, 20 DVDs of pornography. I took all of that stuff. I put it in a black bag, garbage bag, and I was going to throw it away. I was dating this guy at the time, and we were just starting to get to know each other. And it didn't dawn on me that he had an issue until down the road, but He said, what is that? I was like, my porn. I said, I'm throwing all this stuff away. I don't want this stuff in my house anymore. And at this point, we, you know, saw each other on the weekends, but we weren't living together. He was like, well, don't throw it away. He said, let me take it. I'll take it with me. I really didn't think anything of it, you know, because anyone who knows me knows once I get over something, I'll just throw it away in a minute. I will throw shit away. And so he took it back to Atlanta with him. I didn't think anything of it. And he knew about my stance about pornography, how I'm not trying to force it on anyone else, but this is not something I want in my life. So he knew that. Well, next thing I know, I visit him in Atlanta, and we're, you know, having an intimate moment, and he puts on a porn, and like, this is just normal. He just puts on a porn and thinking it's gonna, you know, we're in the moment and all this stuff, and it's gonna be sexy and fun. I was offended instantly, and back then I wasn't as delicate with my words as I am now. I was pissed. I was like, what are you doing? You know I don't like this stuff. Why would you put this on right now? Like, what are you doing? And I was just so offended and mad about it. And even at that point, I didn't understand or realize that he had an addiction to pornography. He wasn't, looking back on it, he wasn't trying to be any type of way or whatever. He just was doing what he normally does, and he didn't really think anything. There was no malice behind it. But I drug that shit out for so long. I was like, I just can't believe you did that. Don't watch this stuff around me. Don't watch it in my presence. You can watch it all day long, 24 hours a day. When I'm around, do not have this shit around me. I don't want to see it, you know? And so it just, from the onset of that relationship, which lasted, I don't know how it lasted 13 years. I don't know how it lasted, because this was early in our first year, and this was a huge hurdle to overcome. He just pissed me off. And so we finally got over that. But, you know, a lot of angst and issues in our relationship was because he was constantly fighting this pornography addiction. And because it was something that he was dealing with, I fell back into it. You can't be in a relationship with somebody who has a pornography addiction and not be impacted by it. So I just, he normalized it for me. Pornography, it became normalized again. It was like, Andre, it's not that big of a deal. You're not killing anybody. It's just harmless. This is something you do in the privacy of your own home. So it became this normalized thing, and it got back into my life. But I was always resentful toward him for that. And that infected a large part of our relationship, because I still to this day, I can't stand pornography. But I had to, even once we, you know, broke off our relationship and broke up, I still had that. I was left with that pornography addiction that I was been trying to get rid of since I was 25 years old. So I just had a lot of residual anger from that. And it just took me so long to finally get over that. And I bring that up not just to be graphic or crass. When you have strongly entrenched habits like that, that you really want to break in earnest, it can be done in your own strength, but you really have to lean on God for some things. And if you're not a big God person or whatever, I'm not judging you, it's going to be hard to do on your own. Get a support group or a friend that is supportive that you can talk about, oh man, I almost watched porn today. You know, and it's just someone who you can, don't try to go through it on your own. That's something that, because of the shame and the guilt I had from watching pornography, and let's be honest, it was gay porn, so it was like a double whammy. So it's not something you jumped up and down about talking, you know, to other people about. It was shame, you know? So that kept me in the dark and hiding it and trying to deal with it on my own for years and years, and making it to 2 weeks and making it to 2 months, and then falling off the wagon and feel like you're starting all over, and how you feel like you're never going to break it and you're just hopeless. Until I just gave that stuff to Jehovah. I just gave it to God. I was like, look, Lord, you know I don't want to watch this stuff. I know you don't like me watching it. Help me get this out of my life. It's bad enough I'm already doing XYZ lifestyle, which I had my own issues with. That's a whole nother episode. But I didn't want to indulge in pornography. It just did not make me feel good. And so once I start to invite Jehovah into my business and in my new goals I was trying to establish, it got easier. It became less impossible. And then something that helped me as well is I learned the psychology behind forming new habits. And this is what I touched on last week. When you're trying to break a bad habit, don't focus so much on that bad habit and, oh, I've got to break this. Replace it with a better habit that's non-destructive. for me, every time I got the urge to watch pornography, I picked up my Bible. Because it was this thing to where I was doing it in the morning. You know, it was like part of my routine. And that came from that, you know, relationship I was in, picking up other people's habits. But I was like, I'll be damned if I masturbate to some pornography before I pick up my Bible or pray or praise God and thank him for another day. I'm just not going to do it. So if I have to feel like I do have to watch pornography, I'm going to make sure I pick up my Bible first and at least read a scripture. So I would replace that urge with another urge, which was reading the Bible. Before I knew, I was reading the Bible all the time, reading it all throughout the day. And it helped me overcome that. And so if I wish I would have knew that years before, because I could have applied that principle of replacing a bad habit with a good habit. And it just would have made my road a lot easier. So that's why I bring this up in this conversation this evening. I don't want to be crass. I don't want to run the babies out the the room. But that subject matter was not appropriate. But I use it to illustrate a point that if you have a bad habit, replace it with something good, and you'll have a lot more success with that. And for anyone out there that's struggling with pornography and want to stop, now you know you're not the only one. I know when you're doing it, it feels like this guilty, shameful thing that no one else is doing. A lot of people suffer with that. I have a good friend, I won't call his name. It ended his marriage, pornography. And so he used that as fuel to break his addiction. You know, he said, you know, I lost my family. I lost my marriage because of this. So he's staunchly against pornography because he tied a motivation behind it. So I hope that's helpful to you in helping you to overcome something or to break a bad habit in your life, okay? Rely on God if you're a God person. I hope you're a God person. Seek support groups and replace bad habits with a better habit. Okay? All right, so how are we looking on time? 6:47. Let's move on to the next thing. It was something else I wanted to bring up in this episode. One of them was, I get asked this question a lot about, because since I've been in Puerto Rico, since I've retired, I've written 3 books. Really more than that, but I don't really count micro books that are less than, you know, 30 and 20 pages. But a lot of people have asked about my approach to writing books. And I think that should be an entirely different episode. That's going to take more than a segment to explain to you. But if you're someone that is working on a book, you have a book idea, you have a concept, you have a manuscript, and you're just kind of stuck, my company, Just Be Cards, is the company that houses all of my media, all of my publishing, all of my books. And I have services where I help consult aspiring authors or first-time authors getting that first book out there is hard. It's exciting, but there's so many different little details and things like that, and it can become overwhelming, especially if you're just a writer, or you don't know the mechanics behind all the stuff that you need to do with the marketing and all that type of stuff. My company excels in all that. I've published numerous books for myself. I've published for other people. I handle everything from as much as you need. If you need your hand held all the way through the process, I can help you with that. If you just need help with the copy editing or the marketing piece, I got you with that too. So reach out to me if you have a book, you have a concept, you have a manuscript, and you just need to get through the finish line. I can help you with that stuff. No need to kind of suffer through that on your own. So that would be another episode in the near future, okay? But in keeping with the theme of today's show, Better Late Than Never, I want to talk about renewing or applying for your password. Not password. See, I haven't even been drinking. Renew or applying for your passport, okay? I know some of you are like, passport, what are you talking about? There's a lot of people who have expired passports. They're about to expire, or they don't have a passport at all. Listen, this is not the time. You see who we have as our president. I try not to even talk about that man, but you see what's happening. This is not the time to not have access to a passport so you can get out of the country, okay, if you need to leave for a couple of weeks or a couple of days. It's just something you need to have. It's only $75. You go to your local post office, or there are services that do the whole thing for you. But the bottom line is that you and everyone in your past, your household, rather, needs to have an updated current passport, okay? Because with everything going on with the government and laying off people left and right, I don't know how long. It took a long time anyway. Even the expedited passport took a while to get back. So I have no idea what their process is now. I don't want there to be some type of crazy thing go on to where passports are not available, or there's a moratorium on passports, or just something weird, and you're left with a passport that's expiring, or you don't have a passport at all. So that's my PSA to you guys. There's a lot of global instability. You see, I got the hell on. The States just has a lot going on. I'd rather be in Puerto Rico dealing with hurricane season than going through what's, you know, what's happening in the States and all the toxicity there. I know that's not for everybody, but for me and my household, I had to get the hell on. So I really want you to think about getting your passport. Look into what the federal processing is. The last time I checked, the turnaround was as little as 6 weeks all the way through 12 weeks to process, if you just choose the normal route and not go to expedited route, okay? And I do urge you to pay the little extra money to do the expedited. But you just want to be prepared for things that could happen or unexpected travel opportunities. You never know. You may have a generous friend or family member that says, hey, I'm going to Jamaica, and I bought a ticket for this person, but they told me at the last minute they can't go. Do you want to go? Oh, girl, I would love to, but I don't have a passport, or my passport expired last year. Be ready for opportunities like that. I'm speaking it into existence. Someone is going to invite you somewhere. You need your passport, okay? And again, it's just about liberation and freedom and just exposure. You know, if you have the resources, if you have the connections, go explore. Even if it's just to Canada, go take a drive up to Canada, see something different. If they let you in, Canada is not really feeling us right now from the little bit of glimpses I've been catching on the news. Stop watching the news too, you know. Read my book, Unlocking Your Best Life. It's on Amazon. Stop watching the news. It's just programming you to worry. It's programming you to have fear. You know, I'm not going to get into it. It's a whole nother episode. But the thing for this show is better late than never. Get your passport if you already don't have it. And if it's expiring, then make sure you get it renewed ASAP, okay? Because no one knows what's going on in this crazy environment that we're in right now, okay? So that's going to wrap up today's episode of Live with Dr. Andre Jerry. I want to thank you so much for spending an hour of your time with me. I don't take that for granted. I hope I gave you some things to think about. I hope I made you smile and laugh a little bit. Don't miss next week's episode. It's going to air Wednesday, July 30th at 6 p.m. Eastern. We're going to dive into some more exciting topics that's going to help you make even more progress in your journey toward unlocking your best life, okay? So until then, keep pushing forward. And remember, it's never too late to start something new, something different. All right. Love you guys. I'll see you next week. Take care.